Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand. And donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
There are so many things that we're all implicated in every day that we know are shitty. We know that when we order from Amazon or we take an Uber, that we are taking part in a process that somewhere along the chain someone's getting exploited and it's shitty. And increasingly, we know that that applies to our media consumption as well. I think the glamour around this industry is pretty much gone. And we know that when we read a news story or listen to a podcast, we are probably consuming a product that was made by people who are getting exploited. And just as many of us kind of just hold our noses and continue to order from Amazon or take Ubers or whatever, I think we're increasingly getting the idea that the same dynamics apply to media, that if you want to be informed or if you want to be entertained, that just sort of comes with the product, like this kind of icky sense of complicity with a shitty industry. And I'm telling you this because I want you to know that it does not have to be shitty. Canada Land is not shitty to its employees. I couldn't always say that. At first, it was just like, what is the least amount of money that everybody here will work for? And that included me. But year after year, it has gotten better and better. 10% raises 1 year, 14% raises the next, health benefits, job security. People who work here, I've seen as they've gotten married and bought homes and had kids. It's a place where you can have a career. So now we are better than some of the very big companies in terms of how we compensate our people and how we treat them. But we're still not as good as others. And my promise to our team here is that the goal is not to live up to the standards set by other Canadian media companies, because the standards are kind of shitty. Our goal is to exceed them. I want this to be the best place to work in Canadian media. If that's going to be the case, we have a long way to go. And if that's going to be the case, it's only going to happen because you help us. That's how it's worked year after year. I have made appeals to you to help me make this a better workplace. And I think that works for you too, because nobody wants to feel bad about the product they're consuming. You do not have much power over what Amazon does, but you do have very direct power over what Canada Land does. It's very simple. If enough of you support us, then everybody here, except for me, gets a raise this year. And the standards here go up for freelancers, contractors, and our staff. And that is the goal that we're heading towards. And we absolutely need you to kick in if that's something that matters to you. We also have perks like ad-free versions of all of our podcasts and bottle openers and t-shirts and tote bags and our book. We just put our book back in our Patreon. Please go to patreon.com/CanadaLand. Again, there's a ways to go. Welcome everybody who has signed up, hundreds of you in the last week or two. We need a lot more of you to do so. patreon.com/CanadaLand. Thank you. Sarah Hadji.
Hey, what's up?
Former staff writer of Fresh Daily, grand opening, grand closing. Too soon?
Nothing matters anymore.
Welcome back. Today, we are going to talk about the website where you were briefly employed, Fresh Daily. What the hell happened? It was supposed to be Canada's Deadspin.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Canada's a lot of things.
We will also talk about Elizabeth May's parting shot at the media. It's good to have you back.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Joshua Lee, Jordan Rosman, Henry Adam Sveck, Carburetor, haha, Patrick Bradley, Lauren DiNapoli, John Sousa, and Nick Cluley.
Hey, this is Nick Cluley in Victoria on Lekwungen territory. I support Canada Land because it's a rare space in Canadian media that actually questions and offers intelligent criticism of the power structures in this country.
So if I donated to Canada Land and it was huge ass, you'd be like, huge ass.
I will absolutely thank huge ass if you do that. And I'll know that it was you, Sarah.
That's so funny.
I think that before we tell everybody how everything went to hell at Fresh Daily, we have to tell people what Fresh Daily was supposed to be or was or is. I'm confused. Can you set this up? What's the deal?
Yeah, I'm going to try and be as brief as possible because there was so much. So essentially, the owner of BlogTO, Tim Shore, so he's the only owner of BlogTO, obviously hugely successful. Whatever you think of BlogTO, like, you're probably on it at some point during the day.
A lot of people listening to this outside of Ontario might not know that it's a clickable, shareable content.
The most comparable thing would be something like Narcity or Daily Hive, where BlogTO on its own is its own kind of like very Toronto and I guess sometimes Ontario-centric website where you know what's open and closed on holidays, the hottest restaurants that are opening, restaurants that are closing. Like, it's a lot of like clickable, shareable kind of stuff. Viral videos that took place in Toronto, not necessarily focused on quality of writing, but more just quantity and getting people kind of information that they could easily retweet or share on Facebook.
We never really talked about it, but it is, as I understand it, a successful Canadian media company.
Oh, like extremely successful. I mean, like, they made money off video in a way that other people haven't. Like, they make money. They're very profitable. So I was approached by another writer who was doing like some of the, I guess, hiring for Tim. Canadian media, especially in Toronto, is very small. Like, everyone knows each other or knows of each other. Like, you know, it's not like, even if you haven't met someone, you're still like, oh yeah, like, I know you.
It's very small in that I'm pretty sure you're talking about Sean Craig, who used to work here.
So I am talking about Sean Craig, and he and I have had similar experiences with different media companies or whatever. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. And, you know, he was like, so this thing is starting up. It's going to be like, there was no name yet, but the only owner was going to be Tim. The only owner is Tim. And it's kind of aimed to be like bloggy and newsy at the same time. So kind of capturing what BlogTO has, in that there's like a lot of quick kind of short posts, and then kind of establishing a voice in a way that other websites, like, for example, again, to draw the comparison to Narcity, where it does have the national focus, but they don't really have essays or, I would say, like, high quality voicey writing. And of course, there's like a shortage of media jobs all over. But I feel in Toronto, where I live, you know, specifically, like, it's almost impossible to get a full time job. So even though I'm not necessarily a fan of BlogTO, it's not something I would want to write for or associate my name with, based on the writing I do and everything, I was pretty like cautiously optimistic. You know, we met and talked about this, like, and Sean at that point wasn't sure if he was going to work there or whatever. But, you know, we talked, and then I ended up talking with Tim. What I did like about it was he wanted to hire me for a reason, and it wasn't just because he wanted kind of like quick content or aggregated news or anything. Like, he knew my voice. He knew the kind of places I've written for. He knew my name and the kind of stuff I'd want to do.
Well, I mean, you know, looking at it, it was an interesting project because it's like, okay, you've got this proven formula for, you know, like just how to make money off of content. You've done it with BlogTO. And rather than a very high-minded, like, you know, we found somebody to do like The Walrus for Millennials, we're going to take this commercial format, but I was noticing like, wow, like Sarah Hadji, Sean Craig, and then Jaron Kerr, who left us to go work for this. I'm like, they seem to actually care about getting some real writing and reporting talent in there. And I like when media, rather than take like start off with that high ground, approach a mass audience in a friendly commercial way, but have the firepower to actually do really substantive stuff. I'm like, this actually is something to watch.
When we were talking about like what it would be like, it was very comparable to, I mean, what I saw with something that had kind of like quick news, bloggy type of stuff. Plus, you know, you'd go on it for features, you know, a lot of websites that are so beloved and unfortunately don't exist anymore. Something like Splinter, which was like, in my opinion, just like it was a great website to go on and you'd be able to read something quick and whatever, funny. And then there'd be like a nice, like an essay where you're learning something, or something like Deadspin or like how Gawker was, where it was that mix of, again, quick blogging and features. So that really appealed to me and my sensibilities, because that's something I want to do both of. And as a freelancer, it's extremely hard to be able to do things that are very timely, because you have to be communicating with an editor who already has a job, who has their own staff, and it's just very hard to time. So I wanted something where it'd be a home for my writing.
Plus a chance to start at the ground floor of something is kind of exciting.
Exactly. So I didn't interview for the job. It was offered to me. The salary I asked for wasn't argued. Got it right away. And, you know, it seemed like he understood kind of the business side of things, and he wanted people who understood media, the media landscape, and how things worked. And he said, I don't want to be a part of this hands-on. Like, I don't want to be leading this editorially. Like, I want you guys to find your voice and to find pretty much anything you want to hear from someone who's hiring you.
It sounds too good to be true.
I mean, you'd think so, but, you know, I'd ask questions and I would get answers. And then I was optimistic, and I knew that there would be road bumps and kind of, sorry, roadblocks. Road bumps isn't a phrase, I don't think.
Anyway, makes perfect sense, though.
I knew there'd be roadblocks. I knew there'd be things that didn't quite work. But, you know, I was willing to take the chance. I'm a freelancer. I was like, worst comes to worst, if I want to quit, I'll quit. And another thing that I was told, it wasn't in a contract or in writing or anything, was that Tim was willing to make this work for, I think he said like 2 years without it kind of making money. You know what I mean? Like, he was willing to work at a loss for a couple of years until this became profitable, which is also something that you want to hear, because anyone knows that a website, it's not going to be profitable for a while.
Yeah.
And he understood that.
What's the commitment? What, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So in my mind, I was like, okay, maybe I can at least have a job for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted a month.
So again, what the hell happened?
I've never been a boss or have managed anything, but based on my experience and what I saw, the hiring process was very mismanaged, in the sense that there were a lot of amazing, like some of the best people I can think of who were in talks of being hired at this place. They already had jobs as well. Like, some of them had stable employment already at media companies, and they were willing to, a lot of people were very, very close to leaving their jobs to work at Fresh Daily.
Yeah.
Which is honestly so frightening to me. I mean, Jaron already left his job to work for Fresh Daily.
Yeah.
And then there are so many people, like people with kids, people with mortgages.
Because the senior editors had yet to be hired.
Yes.
And they were really going for some well-known and established people and saying,
people who,
leave that unionized job.
Yeah, come here. The pay will be great. Like, I was getting paid well, so I couldn't imagine how well, like, an editor or managing editor would be getting paid. And, you know, like, I even talked to some people I was like, hey, like, I heard you're talking to get a job at Fresh Daily, and they would be like, yeah, like, and you know, I'd be honest with them, like, there were a bit of things that I was kind of worried about as far as like content cycle goes. Like, again, you know, when your boss comes from a background where it's post as much as possible, look at Google Trends, look at this, look at that, put in these keywords,
content
and all
farms.
That, yeah, content farm, like, just kind of like churn stuff out. You know, there is some stuff that is a bit worrying, and like that I was trying to find the balance of, like, okay, like, I understand websites have to make money and there will be like ways to make money, but like also kind of what will set us apart, what will make us not a shitty website kind
of thing. Well, you don't hire like you and Jaron and Sean if that's the kind of content you want to make. And there's like BuzzFeed maybe once had its, you know, people mm-hmm. like handcuffed to the desk, you know, churning out lists, you know, 100 a day. But if that stereotype or cliche about them was ever true. But it got to a point where they were hiring, they're doing major investigations.
Absolutely.
Or they're hiring, like, you know, like Sacha Cole is writing personal essays and taking a lot of time to make, you know.
Like good, thoughtful work that takes time to make. And from what I understood, there would have been the core staff of people writing those kind of feature type of things. And then more junior staff who would be doing like daily content, like, you know, four posts a day kind of mm-hmm. thing, where it'd be like, oh, here's a video that was going viral on Twitter, embedding it in the CMS, writing what the video was, and then posting it.
Well, they had Lauren O'Neill as well, who was kind of like
yeah.
a senior person in that world who, you know, it wouldn't be by virtue of like pumping out 20 things. It would be like knowing how to properly.
Exactly. And they did. And people from BlogTO were supplementing that until we were fully staffed up. So whoever Tim was talking to for managing editor, it fell through completely. So we were left without a managing editor.
And you launched without one.
And we launched without one because it was very important to launch around election time, which personally didn't make sense to me because no one's going to go to a new website to read election coverage. Like, no one knows what this is. Like, who wants election coverage from this website that you've never heard of?
It's sort of the worst time to launch because it's when people are most, I guess, enmeshed with their faves, you know?
Yeah, but at that point, we'd been hired on, our first day was October 1st. Until the website was launched, it was just losing money because there was nothing to post and there was no team. So it was kind of like, okay, we do this now or why are you here kind of mm-hmm. thing. And it just slowly, everything kind of started getting like progressively, I don't know if I could say worse because like we were trying to just kind of like understand like, okay, we were hired for this purpose. This website needs content. We will be doing stuff we don't want to write about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe we can throw in things that would be like establishing our voice or having...
It's kind of a soft launch.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was...
Yeah.
It was fine. Like, we were like, okay, this is how it is now. Once we get our managing editor and our full team, things will be better.
For people who don't know, like often a website or a publication, before they actually make a big announcement and publicize that they're there, just start running the thing and get into the rhythm of posting articles every day. That's a soft launch and to kind of get your game up for when it actually is kind of go time.
And I didn't announce the job on Twitter or anything. I didn't say, hey guys, like I have this new job because first of all, it's very new. Second of all, I wasn't doing anything I was proud of yet.
Did you know somewhere deep down inside? Were you like,
I was kind of like, I guess it's like almost like when someone's pregnant and they don't want to announce it for a few months because they're like, I don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, you had contracts. They leased office space. This was a thing.
It felt very real. But in today's media landscape, like, you know, it was funny because I was trying to be as optimistic as possible in the sense that, okay, I shouldn't put myself in a negative mindset until there's reason to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to create kind of negativity for myself until I feel like I have to. But deep down, I was like, oh, I feel so stupid for being optimistic about this because, you know, it just feels so, like, stupid after a while. So last week, Sean, as in the Canada Land article, he left for totally different reasons.
I always, like, raise an eyebrow when I read that totally
It was honestly, like, it was his own thing. Like, it wasn't anything to do with, like, company drama or anything like that. Totally unrelated to any of these events. So it was just me and Jaron who were staffed. And we were, like, speaking for myself, I was just kind of like, oh, shit, like, what's going to happen now? But also, you know, I would talk to people I knew who were older than me and had so much more work experience in media. And they were like, Sarah, this has been up for 2 weeks. No one is stupid enough to just end something after 2 weeks and fire you. Like, this was last week, me being like, oh, like, I feel so weird about things. Like, no one's been hired yet. And, like, I can't do certain things without a managing editor. And everyone was like, no, like, this is just how things start off. Like, everywhere, like, the first month is hard. The first 2 months are hard. And I'm like,
these are people trying to be your friend saying, don't be such a pessimistic person. A good thing is happening. Have patience. Take a moment to enjoy something.
And
Your worst conception of how things always fall apart.
Yeah, and so on Friday we had these meetings. I had a one-on-one meeting where it's kind of, he was like, how do you feel about everything? And I was like, you know, I feel very optimistic still, even though there have been so many roadblocks. Like, I do feel like this is something that has potential. I know you hired me for a reason. Like, clearly you don't want me to be writing like three, you know, blog posts about fall colors a day. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, is that literally what you were writing?
Like, no, I wasn't literally writing that.
What were you writing?
I wrote things like, okay, I wrote this one piece that was actually an essay about spam phone calls, which I was like, again, I was like almost too scared to share it because I didn't have like a managing editor looking over it. And, you know, I don't know, like, for those who don't know, the writing process between a writer and an editor, if it's good, then you're doing a lot of back and forth and they're giving you a lot of they're asking you questions. They're making you think about things in a different way when you send them a draft, where they'll be, you know, highlighting a paragraph, asking you to unpack things. And it was just very hard to do that level of writing that I enjoy doing without an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Even on Friday, he asked me, like, so do you know anyone who you think should be managing editor? Like, is there anyone I should be contacting? And I was like, yeah, I think you should contact so-and-so again that you're talking to before because they're really great and blah, blah, blah. And it was someone I had talked to. And again, like, in my mind now, I'm like, had some of these people left their jobs? Like, that would have been the biggest mistake, you know? And so Friday, I left work feeling okay. Like, I was like, okay, I don't have to worry about things. Like, we're seeing eye to eye on where this is going. Monday, which is 2 days ago and feels like forever ago at this point, I went to work like normal. I worked until 2 p.m. And then he met with me and was like, you know, I've been thinking about it over the weekend and this is just not something that is really working. Like, I'm not quoting him directly because also I was just kind of like, okay, yep, because I just wanted the situation to end fully. Like, I was like, cool, understand, like, kind of just like stop talking so I can get the hell out of here.
As soon as your worst fears were kind of confirmed, like, yeah, he's shutting this.
Yeah, and he was, you know, like, you know, this is just what has to happen because, you know, this isn't just like what I was seeing and I don't have the time to be on this in the way that, like, that I should be kind of thing where, like, there's no managing editor. He was the one who was directing us editorially and saying yes and no to things sometimes.
You got to back up, though, because, first of all, this is what he told us when Jonathan Goldsby wrote a quick news piece when word of this came. And this just happened a few days ago. He said he does not say that he's shutting it down. And in fact, the account's been tweeting. So Tim Shore told Canada Land, I would say it wasn't my objective to launch a site and within 2 weeks have so many staffing changes. But unfortunately, that's what happened, and we have to move on, basically. So the suggestion there is we're not shutting this down. We just made some staffing changes.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of what he was saying in so many words was, you know, we're going to continue with the site, but it's just not going to be what we talked about. Meaning, I think he just wants, at this point, for it to be BlogTO National. You know, like a national version of BlogTO type writing.
But he was unable to get a managing editor, and so he just laid off everyone?
That's my understanding is that, yeah, the staffing was done. It was poorly staffed. It wasn't. And there are people who have been DMing me like, yeah, I was in talks with him, and I never heard anything back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
the suggestion I take from this all is that, like, it's not that he's going to get rid of you and get somebody else in that place. He's going to find a much cheaper model to somehow feed this thing.
You know, he said to us many times, if I wanted people who were going to be just turning out five pieces, I wouldn't have hired you guys. I could have hired someone straight out of school who would be doing this for much cheaper. And there are people at BlogTO who were getting paid probably around half of what I was getting paid. And now they're, I guess, doing double duty. If I look at the website, they're writing for both BlogTO and Fresh Daily. You're just kind of like, oh, okay, so I understand now. You don't want us because you paid us too much money and you can't handle what you promised.
Yeah. I'm sorry, by the way. This is, you know, and that goes to everyone else involved. It's awful. What's to be taken from this? I mean, this played out the same week. We were joking around about Deadspin. Of course, that's the U.S. Sports site that under new management got, you know, like, they inherited the ethos of Gawker, and they're kind of from that divination. And I'm not a sports guy, but sometimes I find myself reading Deadspin because they didn't always write about sports. They had a really kind of very, very smart and incisive look at a lot of different things. And, you know, it was just a very respected outfit. And then they were given orders from management to stick to sports from now on. And they published a lot of stuff that was having a lot of fun at management's expense. But then they all just quit. And there's a wider conversation happening about how shitty management is part of the problem. That it's not just about
the best people or...
Or even like business models and, you know, Google and Facebook's effect, you know, or maybe it is. Maybe that because of that effect, we're kind of left in the hands of shitty management. But there are things that kind of worked and were, you know, people always bring up like Gawker always made money. There are ways to do this and turn a profit, but somehow something in the kind of like horse trading of media sites and acquisitions and speculation. And then, of course, you've got just bizarro stuff like the Peter Thiel situation with Gawker. Like, all these other influences come in. And I think that because those that do make a profit, the profit margins are so small, we don't really fit into this wider, glitzy tech era of profits. Like we're kind of like modest moneymakers when we can figure it out. But that, like, it seems like we're vulnerable. I don't know. Like, is there a wider thing here? Like, I sort of see a bit of a pattern.
Absolutely, there's a wider thing. You know, this happened, and honestly, I was treated... as someone who's disposable, you know, again, I'm speaking for myself, but I see it as, you know, Jaren and I were treated as people who are disposable
mm-hmm.
in the sense that beyond looking at things in a business type of way, of course, businesses, if you're starting a business in our world, it has to be profitable, clearly. And I totally get that. This didn't seem like it was about profits or making money. In the sense, like, we weren't making money. Nothing makes money in 2 weeks. It was more kind of like, I don't really think this is working the way I wanted to. Bye, you know?
That's just how casual.
It's very casual. It was very casual. Again, like, I also can't speak for Tim or what he thought about or what led him to make this decision. And 2 days after talking to one of his employees about, you know, okay, cool. Like, I think we're on the same page. Who should I be hiring?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
I've decided no one.
48
Goodbye.
Hours?
Yeah.
The thing is, this kind of world of media, people who are writers and people who are, you know, creating what people consume are seen as disposable. It doesn't matter that someone left their job to work for you and that you promised a vision that clearly you didn't really want to work hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, to kind of realize or anything. And it was just kind of like, well, I wasted a month of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's over now. And it's kind of just this very highly capitalistic way of viewing, you know, workers and people who you employ where it their real lives don't matter.
I mean, it happened to someone who's a friend and a colleague of mine, you know, like that's Jaren, you know? Like,
yeah. And it's insane. Like, it could have happened to so many different people. Honestly, like, it truly, like, makes me sick to think about the people I talk to about this job who were behind the scenes, like, thinking of maybe talking to Tim or Tim was going to talk to them. And me being like, hey, like, I think maybe this could be worth it. Because I was led to believe that. And I would have felt so guilty in a way.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't have anything to do with me. What I'm trying to say is, I guess... And this is something that a friend of mine who's a labor organizer who unionized MTV before they laid everyone off in their pivot to video, Haley Melodic, she's a writer as well. And I was talking to her about this and I tweeted this. I was talking to her about just like employment versus freelancing and just kind of how the media landscape is right now, where it's so jobs are so scarce that they're seen as this incredible prize. And she was just kind of pointed out, like, isn't it insane that a job is the reward and, you know, being an independent writer or freelancer, that's the punishment.
Yeah.
So unless you are employed, your punishment is that you're working for yourself. Like, working for someone else is the prize you get for working hard.
The one thing I see that gives me a bit of hope is that people who set their sights modestly can not only turn a profit, but create media on a level of like an employee-owned local newspaper. If you're not trying to build an empire and if you have the direct relationship with your audience, like, or journalists one-on-one building economic models with their audience and their subject matter simultaneously, like, those things, like as long as we keep trying to shoot for, like, acting as if we're, like, tech startups.
Well, the thing is, that's what I saw with Fresh Daily, the goals were very modest. The initial team was supposed to be 7 people.
Yeah.
We had the funding. We had all the tools to become a really amazing place, like a really amazing destination with great voices. The people who were in talks to be hired, I cannot even tell you how talented they are. It would have been an amazing, diverse team of some of the best writers, mm-hmm. like in Canada, really. And that's what could have happened, and it didn't.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Okay, Sarah, we duly note things that perhaps would otherwise just whiz past people's consciousness. And I have something to duly note.
Go for it.
Okay, so by now I think probably everybody listening to this is aware that we have dangerous, unsafe levels of lead in the drinking water of 11 Canadian cities, Regina, Montreal. This major investigation that was conducted between Toronto Star and the Associated Press and the investigative group at Concordia, they unveiled earlier this week this major project they'd been working on that is like, if you think about journalism from just like a public responsibility, like what do we have to tell? Like things are happening in the world, and from a public safety perspective, holy shit, stop drinking the water if you live in these cities. That's a major revelation. And I started to get tweets and emails as that news cycle that day went on, saying, hey, how come this Toronto Star story cannot be found on the CBC's website? And then I went and I looked at the Globe and Mail's website, and it wasn't on the Globe and Mail's website. And then I went to the National Post, and it wasn't on the National Post website. And before everybody asks me and says, it absolutely is on all those places now, that day, it was not. And you could chalk that up to just like our resources being thin and places taking a while to get there. But I think Canadians had that news for hours and hours before those news organizations picked up that story. And I speculated, like, I wonder if this has something to do with it being kind of like a proprietary Toronto Star thing, where other news organizations are saying, like hell, we're not going to be boosting mm-hmm. your prestige story that you've put all of your enterprise bucks into. We've got our own story that we're going to want a mission reward for, and we're saving our reach for that. And then, you know, other people are saying, like, I don't know, the science of this is questionable. And the Toronto Star has a history of kind of like public health scares when they falsely reported that the HPV vaccine is linked to autism, which was the only conclusion you could take from this major, very dangerous story. And I don't know. I just wanted to duly note that like there was a time earlier this week when the Guardian newspaper and the BBC were telling the world that you can't drink the drinking water in 11 Canadian cities, and the Globe and Mail and the CBC were not spreading that news. And I'm kind of opening that up for people's contemplation, consideration, and also my inbox is open to figure out things about that.
Duly noted.
Sarah, what do you have for us today?
Something that's been in the news a lot more than unsafe drinking water is Wexit. The
Wexit?
It's called Wexit, right?
Wexit.
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 Well, yeah.
It sounds like a real thing,
because it's not a real thing. I just think it's so incredibly stupid. You know, it is a small group of people in Alberta. It's a small group. It's like they had a rally and it was 700 people there. If you think about all of Alberta, like that's not a huge deal. That's a fringe group of weirdos wearing Make Alberta Great Again hats who are like, yeah, we shouldn't let Ontario decide what happens. And their solution to this is being their, like, separating from Canada rather than being like, hey, we should talk about electoral reform maybe and like change a system so that a small part, like a small region of the country isn't making decisions for everyone. And to me, it's just so stupid. I feel like every media, like Canadian media thing, is latching onto this like it's a real thing. When it's not, they shouldn't be legitimized in any way. Also, Vice Canada reported that they do have these white supremacist ties.
Yeah, Stephen Joe did the work. And you know, you'll see these people interviewed on the CBC as, here's a Wexit leader. And the fact that his like right-hand man has no neo-Nazi links.
And you're like, are we legitimizing these people again? Like, did we learn nothing from these recent Richard Spencer videos? Where, I mean, clearly that guy was going on rants about Jewish people, like, surprise, he's racist. And it's kind of like we're legitimizing these idiots on the news by interviewing them and making them seem like they're thought leaders. Like, they're not. It's never going to happen. And we're making it seem like it's something that will happen. That, oh, man, maybe Alberta's going to leave. No, they're not. Like, it's like, I will eat my shoe if that happens in my lifetime. And it's so stupid to me.
All right, we'll hold you to it. Duly noted.
Perfect.
So Elizabeth May has stepped down as leader of the Green Party. And as she did so, she had some words for we, the media.
Now that I'm not leader of the Green Party of Canada, I hold the media to account for failure to deal with the science in the course of this campaign, for continuing to talk about climate change as though people understood it. It's as if we were having a debate on the economy where no one in the room understood inflation.
Now that I'm leaving this relationship, let me tell you what I really think of you. Fair?
Yeah.
Fair.
I'd say it's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not wrong.
No.
I don't think climate change is taken nearly seriously enough by any major Canadian media organization.
You know, her remarks were specific to, I think, election campaign. Mm-hmm. But I think whether you look at the way that we treated climate change in the election or whether you look at the way we treat climate change in all the coverage, fair. You know, I mean, like, it probably got it more time in debates and in coverage than it has in previous cycles. But that's a pretty terrible standard when you consider, like, it sort of dwarfs everything else that we might be talking about. Our producer, Tiffany, brought my attention to this incredible report, not from the Canadian media, from the Washington Post. They did a podcast about how Canada is already crumbling into the ocean. The Magdalene Islands, like, they lost 50 feet in one storm.
Oh, geez.
Like, they're just watching the land that they live on disappear.
These little group of islands are really experiencing a growing battle against erosion, a lot more flooding. And, you know, when you're there, you get this sense of the urgency and immediacy of this because everywhere you look is the ocean. It's a small place, and from everywhere you look is the sea, and there's nowhere, as one person told me, there's nowhere to hide.
So, fair, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I would definitely say she's not wrong there.
I mean, and you can look at it in terms of, and I think we should increasingly be looking at it in terms of coverage of other things. So when we talk about, as BNN Bloomberg puts it when talking about how difficult it is for the oil patch to get access to capital, when they were talking to Penn Growth CEO, like, you do a story about how, like, damn, you know, like, the oil patch can't get money the way they used to. What's up with that? or if we talk about Encana leaving Canada and everyone's like, oh boy, Trudeau really fucked this one up. Like, this is terrible.
What
this
loss.
Company is,
yeah.
You know, and that company has its own problems, and the media maybe has jumped a little bit too zealously to pin that on this government and not, you know, blame Encana. But however you look at that coverage, we don't let climate be a part of it. We're acting as if these business concerns are somehow hermetically sealed from the wider context.
I guess I feel like nobody, it's like kind of one of those things where it's like, should we be taking responsibility for this? I feel like a lot of climate coverage tiptoes around, you know, what causes it, you know, capitalism, you know, it's, and pinning it on things that are more easy, like individual choice, where it's, you know, use your metal straw and you'll save a turtle or whatever.
Right, right.
And I think that it, you know, when we talk about climate change, there's so much more we have to talk about, which is, you know, what causes it, how, you know, the rich have let us get to this point where, you know, Canada's being destroyed, and kind of taking people to task in a way that I don't think a lot of places really want to get into, or I don't think people want to think about it in that sense. You know, I feel like a lot of, like, people have to kind of, like, radicalize themselves into thinking about things differently if they really want to talk about climate change in a real way. So when Elizabeth May says something like, you know, we're talking about it like it's the economy and like a lot of people don't understand the economy or whatever. Yeah, it's totally true, because, you know, we're failing to let people know the real causes and to really talk about things in a real way, because it scares people.
Yeah, it scares me, and I'm you know, it's easy to take shots, but the truth is, like, I'm having this kind of, like, protracted narrative over the course of, like, anything we talk about on these two shows a week, where I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, I can criticize how they're doing a poor job, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around how you do a good job. Because the truth is, like, you're talking about how, if we talk about how capitalism causes climate change, how do we reflect that in the business section?
Yeah, exactly.
The business section is not built to decry capitalism, and all of our systems are not really equipped, like democracy and, you know, 4-year cycles of government and, you know, the nation state are not really equipped to tackle this problem. Capitalism is not equipped to tackle it and, you know, causes it. And journalism, the way that we look at stories, the way that what we deem to be a story, like this is, you know, at my pay grade, I'm just trying to figure out how do you tell these stories. And some of it is just like simple, the way you do any other story, the way that the Washington Post told the story of the Magdalene Islands. You go there and you talk about what's happening. But, you know, the fact that it is undeniably a factor in anything you look at, it's not sort of like an activist's lament. Why can't the business section talk about climate change? That would have been a dumb idea to a few years ago. But now it's just like, well, no, there are economic consequences. There's a reason why you can't get funding for the oil sands. Everyone understands that we're going to be pulling back from fossil fuels. So it's becoming more absurd for these stories to not have any element of their coverage that recognizes this.
Yeah. I mean, again, people have to, as much as they have to, like, learn about climate change, like, you probably have to unlearn a lot about what you think is right or wrong and how the world's being run, you know? And I again, it's kind of like talking about anything that you might have, like, a part of, you know, when people talk about, for example, something like race or privilege, nobody really wants to see, like, oh, like, this is how everything that's happened in my life has affected this kind of problem, or everything I think kind of falls into this, I hate this word, but, like, problematic behavior. You know what I mean? Nobody really, I feel like it's generalization to say nobody, but it is very difficult to start looking at things differently in a way that will change your life. And I think that a lot of it's difficult for media organizations to know how to navigate that. Like, how are we going to report on this? You know, people don't want to also feel hopeless, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you report on something with, you know, trying to make people feel like, wait, there's still reason to live, though, you know? And like,
not our job.
Yeah. And it's just, but it's kind of like, no one's going to, like, will people want to read that? Like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like there's, like, there's just so many factors in it, and it's something that, I don't know, people cannot address in a proper way, and it's getting too late.
Well, we just have an insulting attitude towards our audiences where, you know, if it's like, what can I do? We're very comfortable with this sort of, like, we have this idea of some, like, Joe Lunchbox, or like, yeah. What can mom do about this? But when you get to the point like, well, what you can do is get really angry and take to the streets, which people want to do and are capable of doing and have done to the tune of a million people, the media, I think, is terrified of pointing anyone in that direction, or even really operating as if that's like an option in our toolbox, like an option in our toolbox, a tool in our toolbox, like as if that's something that citizens can do is to resist or protest is like, hey, whoa.
Also, I think there's like a very, I think traditional media organizations, they feel like there's a line between like, you know, activism and reality, you know what I mean? Where it's, okay, are we going to say things in this way and then kind of make, like take an activist viewpoint,
right?
When that's just the reality of what's happening. But I think it's this like weird way to try and seem objective, like there are two sides to something. Like there aren't two sides to climate change. Like it's happening, you know. It's not. We don't have to look at it like it's like, well, if it is happening, then this and this. It's like, no, this is what's going on, and it's not about activism or anything anymore. Like, it's affecting all of us.
When you know your home is underwater, it's just is.
Yeah.
You know, it's you could be left or right. It's you're underwater.
Yes.
Sarah, thank you.
Thanks.
That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that you send us. There's that 2-week period that you tweeted about, Sarah, where everybody reaches out and says, oh, you got nothing to worry about. You're going to get hired. Where can people reach you?
As we discussed, I don't have a website. I am on Twitter, twitter.com/geekylonglegs. I also have an email that is in my Twitter bio if you want to email me. I would love to be paid for something. So
do not waste this person's time.
Yes, don't email me unless you're offering me money.
Geekylonglegs on Twitter. If you are listening to this Thursday morning, there is still time to come catch our live show at the Hot Docs Podcast Festival tonight at 9:30 p.m. All of our shows are going to be on stage, and we will be announcing a brand new investigative podcast at that show. This episode is produced by Tiffany Lamb. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, if you want to sustain journalism in your country, one way you can do that is by supporting us at patreon.com/CanadaLand.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.